Rachel Barber is joining us. She is the Essex Media Group's news editor. And Rachel, welcome. Thanks for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
All right. Rachel is recently taking over as the news editor. We'll get to that story in just a moment. But Rachel, I think the biggest story in Greater Boston, and in particular, even for the North Shore, including Greater Boston, is how do you get into Boston these days? And as our viewers on this post can see, you guys did a great story today on different ways of getting in to Boston from, in this case, Lynn, the home of the Essex Media Group, if you will. So I guess share with us this story. I obviously have a few follow-up questions and so on, but share with us the overview on what happened in this front page story today.
Of course. Well, I guess I should start with the fact that I myself don't own a car, and I live in Boston, and I work in Lynn. And so every day I am an MBTA commuter, and recently we did a news story where we interviewed the new general manager of the MBTA, Philip Eng, and we also interviewed someone who's, you know, known very well in Lynn, Tom McGee, who has recently joined the MBTA's one of the MBTA's boards and also MassDOT's boards. And, you know, they talked to us a little bit about their campaign that you've probably seen around Boston, the ads that say ditch the drive. And they're telling drivers, you know, for this length of the Sumner Tunnel shutdown, we don't want you on the roads because your commute is going to be potentially an hour longer than it normally would be. And so everyone knows about the Sumner Tunnel shutting down. Lynn is where our office is based, as you said, and it's particularly affected because Lynn Station, the commuter rail station, has been closed since last October. And so for our readers in Lynn and our readers just on the North Shore in general, it's particularly difficult for them to get into Boston during the tunnel closure because they can't just hop on the T because it doesn't stop here. And so there's a few different options that the MBTA has listed for, you know, Lynn residents and North Shore residents in general. And that's the commuter rail, taking the blue line and taking the ferry. And so we had the idea in the office to do a race of all three of those modes of transportation, which can get you the, you know, 11 miles from Lynn to Boston the fastest. And then we also said, well, we should have a control group or control participant in the race. And so we had one of our reporters also drive. And notably, the driver came in second, only just behind the commuter rail. So the list is as follows. The commuter rail was first at 45 minutes. The car was second at an hour. The blue line was third at an hour and 5 minutes. And the ferry was fourth at an hour and 10 minutes, which I thought was interesting given the fact, like I said, I think our office, which was a starting point for our reporters, is only 11 miles from North Station, which was the end destination for the race. And the fastest way you could possibly get there was 45 minutes during rush hour. And the car took an hour. Our reporter who usually drives into Boston says that, you know, before the tunnel shut down, it was 25 minutes. So it's quite the adjustment. And so they all did a really good job and, you know, woke up super early so that they could make the commute as realistic as possible for people living on the North Shore. And we were able to bang out that really cool front page, which I should also shout out our designer, Sam Deeb, who laid out the front page. Which was very cool.
You know, I was struck. There was a story that Chronicle did a long time ago. This is a very long, long ago story. In fact, I probably only saw it when they did a highlight show, an anniversary show, you know, several months ago. Chronicle had a thing where they took the train, plane, or drove from Boston to New York City to downtown Manhattan. And I forgot how it turned out, but it was a very similar kind of story. That your story reminded me of that story. But you know, I looked at the ferry thing, but the thing is, I think though you have to walk from your office to the ferry. Okay, that fair enough. You know what I'm saying, opposed to the commuter rail thing. But then to go to North Station, the ferry is obviously not going to go to North Station, but it may drop somebody off at a very nice location in Boston. So people still have to kind of research things a little bit, and I guess what it was is that it's still all pretty close, all of those options that you basically reported on.
It's true. It's true. And I think in a way it just kind of proves that, as our headline on the front page suggests, our headline is "You Can Get There From Here." There's been a lot of discourse and conversation around, you know, the Sumner Tunnel causing or wreaking havoc on the city and the entire sort of area. And we kind of wanted to address that, but also say, you know, calm the fears, calm the worries, and say it's possible and it's not going to take you forever. And yeah, it's interesting that they're all pretty close.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is, I mean, for our listeners here, is that there's that I was reading something today, and I guess I had thought about this, but there's a lot of, when you try to go to the airport, I mean, this is going to be a horror show for a lot of people at different times during the day, because you may not know these traffic patterns, but sometimes the state police, if you're headed out of the airport, and let's say you want to go to the South Shore, the tunnel is blocked, so they won't let you go to the South Shore. They make you go north and then turn around. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I got to think that is only going to be exasperated tenfold, if you will, with what just happened with the Sumner Tunnel. But that's just me. I don't know.
Right. Right. Absolutely. It's funny. My dad was actually just in town visiting me this weekend, and he took an Uber to the airport from the north end, so not too far, and it shouldn't, you know, two stops maybe on the blue line.
Yeah.
And it was, I think, almost $75 for the Uber. It took them 45 minutes to get there at least. So it's definitely having an impact.
Well, I hope you can work from home sometimes too, Rachel. You know what I'm saying?
You know how journalism is. But.
Yeah, I know. Some of it you can do remotely, though, obviously.
I do feel vindicated by the fact that every day I take the commuter rail, which came in first in our race. So I was happy with that I figured out at least the fastest way.
So Rachel, so you take the commuter rail. So where do you get off in Swampscott then?
Yes, I do. Yeah. So because our office is in Lynn, actually I used to get off at Lynn Station and walk maybe 5 minutes from Lynn Station to our office. But now, yes, I get off at Swampscott Station and I take a Yankee shuttle bus that the MBTA has subcontracted out to take people to and from Lynn and Swampscott. And honestly, I mean, that's the shuttles I've had no problem with. You know, they're driven by super nice people, and the shuttles are a total of like 8 minutes. The ride is maybe 8 minutes. So it's not too bad. But to your point earlier about sort of the routes are not making sense, I am having to go, at least when I go home, further north to Swampscott and then going back into Boston. So I am going out of my way with that, and it's adding an extra 15 minutes to the commute every day at least.
No, absolutely. For sure.
It is interesting, and I think, you know, one of our reporters, Emily Pauls, who actually wasn't a part of this race but is one of our Lynn reporters, she did a great story on the state of the MBTA in Lynn that we ran last week that partially inspired this front page.
Gotcha. All right. So now tell our listeners, you recently took over as a news editor. Tell us a bit about that and how that all happened and your rise to the top at the item, if you will. Yeah.
Sure thing. Well, I mean, I should start by saying I'm very honored to sort of take over and take on the mantle here. The Daily Item has been serving the North Shore since 1877, and so I'm very appreciative of the history that comes with this paper, and I love the fact that we have a huge archive downstairs that, you know, dates back to the 1800s. We have these old prints and everything. So just, I'm honored to be here and working in local journalism at a place that, you know, still prints a paper every day. We print 6 days a week, and we also at Essex Media Group oversee a few weeklies and different magazines as well. So it's really the best of all worlds. There's the daily, and then there's weeklies, and then there's magazines. So we really do it all. I first started here a little over a year ago. And my predecessor, named Ford Jorgensen, had been here for decades and was sort of the saving grace of the item, I think, for many, many years, and the one who's really making it all work through, you know, the tumultuous time that we've seen in journalism in these last decades. He kept it going. And he actually, fortunately for him, retired a few months ago. And we're still in touch, and I'm in his old office now. And so I feel a little connected to him in that sense. And I reach out to him and ask him for advice. But he was the person who hired me to begin with, and the person who pushed for me taking his job when he left. So I'm very grateful for Thor, and very grateful now to have this role. And we've kind of seen this as an opportunity to move the item forward, sort of moving it into the next generation, trying to get younger readers and just more readers to read us. And so we've changed the focus of the content a little bit, just to make sure that we're covering things that everyone cares about. And I think this was a good example of that, you know, just the major stories that affect everyone. It's been a fun ride, a wild ride for sure already in the 4 months I've been doing it, but I'm very grateful for the opportunity. And it's a very important job to have, to be the news editor and, or even just a reporter, at a local paper. And in this case, several local papers where we're covering what would essentially be news deserts without us. So I find the work very meaningful, and I've just been really proud to take on the new role.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure down the road we can talk about that, but obviously papers are transforming, or have even transformed in the last 20 or 30 years, and I'm sure there's still a lot more that has to come and will come in the years ahead. Rachel, I want to ask you, because I understand that your parents are journalists, so you're coming from a mom and a dad that were both journalists. So tell us about that, and so you're kind of toeing the line, if you will, right? Following in the footsteps.
Yes, exactly. It's interesting because, yes, both my parents were journalists. They actually met in a newsroom. They were both broadcast journalists, however. And so I think that's my little rebellious streak, is that I decided to go into print rather than...
You don't know how rebellious that is. My goodness, you're right. That is rebellious. Yeah. Okay. We admire you now. There you go. Yeah.
Well, there you go. And I know, especially now, it's funny to choose print over broadcast, but really I just thought, you know, I'd never want anyone to criticize my appearance while I'm telling a story rather than just read it. But that's a story for a different day. My parents are both originally from Missouri, actually. We're a Midwest family. And they met while my dad was an anchor at a local TV station in Columbia, and my mom was a news intern at the station, and she ran the cameras and she did the teleprompter. So they kind of like got, you know, a little in sync, the way that an anchor and the person who runs the teleprompter would, where she had to anticipate, you know, the way that he would speak. And I guess the way that they tell the story is that it was actually a forbidden romance at their office as well. They couldn't, they weren't supposed to be in a relationship because he was technically senior to her in the office, but that they did it anyway. And their boss was actually pretty okay with it and ended up being at their wedding. And so they started there. My dad went on to be an investigative reporter for the same station. And my mom went on to write a column in the Kansas City Star. And she actually wrote a column on the family entertainment page, which honestly, I'm not sure they still have these days, unfortunately. But she was a family entertainment columnist who wrote a lot about me, actually, and about my other sisters and just raising us. And so she actually passed away in 2016 from cancer. We were very close, but when she passed, you know, I was gifted a binder, that's the word, a binder full of her columns. And so I go back and I read those columns often when I'm sort of looking for motherly advice or just a story from my childhood that I was too young to remember. So journalism is definitely sort of in my blood, if you will. And I've been very appreciative of the fact that so much of my early life was documented, yes, in print in the Kansas City Star, but also just because my dad was a television reporter and always was had a camera in my face. So I have a million old home tapes as well.
You know, it's funny you tell me that story about your mom, and I'm so sorry about her. What happened? The last person I interviewed this week was actually a hockey coach, a guy that I went to college with, longtime college hockey coach who retired. He wrote a book, and his mom was a writer, and she was very instrumental in him writing the book and did review the book, you know, as he wrote chapter by chapter. But she didn't write the book. But it's funny that, you know, so she's a writer, wrote a lot of books herself, actually. And so here's two interviews in a row. I don't think I can keep this one up anymore, but that's a terrific story. That really is a great story. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. And then nowadays, you know, my dad's still around. Like I said, he was just in town, and he actually has moved on into the world of public relations. And you know, he got to a point where he was like, "All right, I should go make money for my children," and which I'm also very appreciative of. But he's very supportive of my journalism career and looks back on his very fondly.
Well, that's fantastic. So again, congrats on this story you guys put together for what would be today's daily item, as we'll pop this interview up here this afternoon. But Rachel, anything else you want to share with us? I've been great talking with you and getting these getting some of these stories and learning a little bit more about you. But anything else you want to share with us?
Yeah, thank you. No, thanks for having me. I guess I would just say to the listeners that if you ever have a story idea or any feedback for us over at Essex Media Group, feel free to reach out. My email is Rachel, R-A-C-H-E-L, at EssexMediaGroup.com. We're always looking for story ideas. And if you want to just say hi, you can also send me an email.
You know, do you find, this is the question I wanted to ask you, but it's, I slipped up and messed up here a moment ago, but reading your mom's columns, do you feel that mm-hmm. you can take something out of them? In other words, everything old can be new again, or twist, you know, reshaped or kind of used in a different way in your work today, that something that your mom or some kind of piece that she might have done, or other, well, obviously other columnists do as well. You know, you don't have to always reinvent the wheel, but some reading back to some of those old columns might give you ideas, I would think.
Sure. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I also went down the path of, you know, I'm the news editor, and before that I covered hard news for the last several years. And so I'm definitely in the news world, whereas she was writing a family entertainment column. So her columns were, you know, she wrote about us adopting our poodle, our dog, and our dog was born in the back of a semi truck in Arizona. And so she wrote about the story of getting that dog and how, and the story of what that dog went through of being born in the back of a semi truck. That's one that was very popular for. She also wrote about the world's largest McDonald's and our visit to it in Florida. And so she wrote a lot about fun things like that. And so it's hard for me. I wouldn't say I necessarily get like story ideas from them, since I am so entrenched in the news world. Mm. But what I really admire about her and her columns is her voice. That everything that you read that she wrote, it just sounds like her. And she had a very distinct voice, and it was direct and strong, but also fun and lighthearted and comedic, which I really appreciate. And since I am so entrenched in the news world, since I got this promotion, I started writing a biweekly column that I inherited from Thor, actually. And this is my first time having an actual column that is a regular column. And so I've gone back to read her columns a lot in preparation for writing those columns, because she has that sort of voice that I would like to replicate, or at least have my own sort of spin on, where she's direct and strong and clear, but also fun and comedic. So I really admire that about them.
Terrific. All right. We'll stop there. Rachel, thanks so much. Great stuff. And thanks for taking time to talk with us. And hopefully we can talk again soon. But best of luck.
Thank you so much.
Rachel Barber with us, the news editor for the Essex Media Group's papers and magazines and periodicals and so on. Rachel Barber with us here on MSONewsSports.com.